There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
You look at this back-to-back against Miami and Boston, and I mean, every single night in the NBA, Carter, you hear some teams say, oh my God, I was so unfocused. I never should have lost to that team. We could be that mistake.
Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton inside. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Cleveland Cavaliers bounce back from that loss to the Miami Heat. Second night of a back-to-back, no problem at all. They beat the Boston Celtics. Celtics put up a little bit of a fight in the second half, but you know what? It wasn't enough. It wasn't enough to overcome Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, Isaac Okoro dunking on everybody. And to talk about it is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Oh boy, needed that one. That was that's going to fuel me for the next couple weeks, I say. How is it that after this many iterations of the Cleveland Cavaliers and after this much roster turnover, that it's still so damn fun to beat the Boston Celtics?
Oh, that is a great question. I actually learned one of the things I learned since we last podcasted is I'm still capable of sports hate. I thought I had passed beyond that stage, and it's not the Boston Celtics. It's Kelly Olynyk. I can't stand that guy.
Man, brutal.
I get thoughts I'm not proud of. I get really, really wound up and angry. And like I'm not necessarily proud of it, but like the fact that this guy's out there undercutting dudes on rebounds, apparently he doesn't get any calls against him.
Unbelievable. I mean, there were times, unless we are mistaken and he is the best perimeter defender of our generation, at least 15 to 30,000 blocking calls should have been charged, where he's getting switched on to Colin Sexton and just barreling into him for no call. Unbelievable. Oh, that was, I mean, here's the thing about the last two games. terribly unfavorable whistles for the Cavs.
And for listeners that have been here for the last few years, we are not the official.
We are not ref. Yeah, we are not ref guys. But man, they were just getting a brutal, no benefit of the doubt whistle, which happens when you're not a good team, and especially when you're in a stretch and you're playing two teams who are good defensive and very physical. You know, the old Jerry Sloan technique of just foul every play and they can't call them all. you know, but man, they were getting bad whistles. So the fact that they were able to kind of fight through that and win against Boston. Oh, it felt so good. It felt so good. And man, did we need it. And it was fun in all the right ways, which is really cool.
It really was. On the one hand, so the first half, it was pretty clear Boston wasn't full bars. They wasn't a great effort from them at all. They were also on the second night of a back-to-back. And it would have been nice for it to just be kind of a cruise to a blowout win, especially after some losses that had kind of made the environment around the Cavs a little testy with the fans, at least in my experience. It would have been nice to get a blowout win, but I had tweeted this.
I think the way it played out was just right.
It's better. Honestly, it's better for the Cavs development to be in these competitive games. I'd rather see them face a team that turned it on. Jason Tatum's shot making in the second half was fantastic. He was out of his mind. They were really selling out again. The second game in a row that we saw a team make an adjustment saying, holy crap, obviously Darius Garland is the engine of this offense, so we're going to sell out. We're going to put Jimmy Butler on him. We're going to put Andre Iguodala on him. We're going to trap the hell out of him. We're going to put Jason Tatum and Marcus Smart on him. And yeah, it's kind of limited his second half scoring to some extent, but I felt against Boston, you saw some growth there where they were making other reads. He was making the right plays. The assists went up.
Well, growth from the team too, you know. Exactly. I mean, beating the trap as a small guard is a team effort, you know. I mean, if you are 6'1" and 2 6'7" players are trapping you, there's only so much you can do, but the Cavs did so much better of coming to meet him, giving him a clear passing target. I think Larry Nance and his IQ just put 1,000 stamps all over this game. Yes. I mean, he had a good box score game too, but I just thought he was really, really smart on both ends of the ball. And, you know, he came and was that outlet valve. And, you know, Larry Nance is the kind of player you want attacking a 4-on-3. You know, we've talked a lot about how our ideal version of Larry in this offense is kind of similar to what Draymond Green functioned as offensively for those 14, 15, and 16 Warriors. Mm-hmm. And it's just 2015 and 2016. Sorry, getting my years messed up. But, you know, like that's kind of what we've imagined. And that's really what a hard trap on Darius gets you is the ball in the hands of a smart decision maker that can dribble, pass, and shoot a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And that's an important growth to see. And I thought that was the first game where it kind of seemed like Larry was a little bit back into the early season form that we saw from him. Like he had good moments prior to that, but I felt that was his most complete game since he's come back from that hand surgery. But yeah, like we've talked about in the past where some of the issues, like the way that teams are able to take away Garland and take away kind of the first option for the Cavs, some of that is a personnel issue, right? They don't have that big playmaker in the front court that can help alleviate that. Like you look at a team like Charlotte, for an example, LaMelo Ball has been fantastic. He's phenomenal. He's way ahead of where I expected him to be in year one, but having a presence like Gordon Hayward is that kind of release valve. It's someone else that they can run the offense through that makes it more difficult for a team to sell out on kind of containing him and throwing that length at LaMelo. So that's not a luxury that the Cavs have right now, but Larry can provide some of that. We saw it against Boston. Not many teams are as aggressive as Miami. Like Miami has length. They've always played this blitz the hell out of you defense. They try to generate those turnovers. They try to take.
And they have like three or four of the smartest defensive players in NBA history. Like
and probably the best coach in the conference as well. Like,
yeah, I would agree with that statement.
Yeah, so like it's nice growth to see. Like that's the one thing that really stands out to me, and I understand it. There's some frustration as the Cavs were going through those losses. Maybe some of that was a result of, hey, they had such a great stretch before the All-Star break. We were waiting for some good basketball, and then we got these losses, and that's why people were a little more testy.
Well, I think they were testy, too, because of how it was happening. You know, I mean, just absolute blown off the floor, you know, single digit quarters, like really kind of dampen your spirits kind of stuff after a long stretch without the Cavs. I think the All-Star break plays into it too. It's like we all came in ready for some fun and we got a couple, you know, ass whoopings. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they were able to, you know, like what was it, three L's in a row and then to come back and kind of just like they kind of felt like a boxer that was out on their feet.
Yeah,
but then they, you know, they were able to survive enough to kind of recapture, you know, their wits and then attack this Boston Celtics team that was vulnerable. And you know what's really fun about the fact that the Celtics did make it a game is it is wild how much I trust this team in close games.
Yeah,
I'm like, yeah, I think they're gonna figure this out. I don't have the same. Even during stretches of the regular season in the second LeBron era, where there was just so much consternation about mm-hmm. things, like I just have so much faith. Like, I'm like, no, I think they're going to figure this out. I think they're going to be okay. Like, and really, what the big thing is, I just don't sense that they feel terribly pressured.
Yeah, yeah, no, they play with confidence beyond their years in that situation,
I mean, which is so weird. I just never, I don't feel like most young teams do this that are, mm-hmm. you know, that are on their way up, like whatever trajectory they're on. I think they're on their own, you know, like I don't think that they have, there's a ton of historical support team that when they loses by 30, but when it's close, when they've got it going enough, they can go toe-to-toe with anyone. They went toe-to-toe with, I mean, even in losses, it's not just that they always win. It's that they don't unravel often in close mm-hmm. games. Like even again, you know, the game where LeBron went absolutely nuclear, they, you know, were shot for shot with them all the way to the end. Yeah. So like, I just don't know what to make of what that means, but I do know that it's, I think it says something about the mindset of the players on the team.
I think it says something about the mindset of the players. I think it says something about the coaching staff as well, managing those situations, getting those players prepared to execute in those situations. Like, I mean,
I'll say this, man, it is. And I know we don't want to have this discussion for the 500th time on basketball discourse, but I do feel like it is a bit of an eye test versus numbers kind of thing, where all the metrics tell you the best predictor of overall team quality and future success is point differential. The Cavaliers are 30th in the league in point differential, but I do not think they are the worst team in the league, especially while healthy, even though that, and I know we'll probably point to the fact that they have had bad injury luck, et cetera, but even when mostly healthy, they're still prone to some stinkers. Let's not beat around the bush here, but you know, despite all the evidence that says that, my brain says I shouldn't be this confident in this team when things are tight against good teams. Mm-hmm. And that must mean something good. I can't quantify it, but that's kind of where my brain is at.
I think that that's a logical conclusion to get to. And I don't know. I was getting grumpy at the discourse because I had seen some
stunner.
People. I know. I had seen some people post like, man, this season, now that this season has gone off the rails and they're so much worse than expected. And I'm sitting here like, if you look at their win percentage, this is a 33 win pace in a regular season. That is
How many wins did you predict for them, Justin?
Your boy predicted 27 wins. We are still on that. I'm close to hitting my over bet. It's a beautiful thing, Carter. but I actually want to give a lot of credit to Chris Fedor because he kind of put something into my head and reported something that I wasn't aware of. Coming back from the All-Star break, obviously there's some new protocols in place with COVID, and it's made the situation on the road even worse, where this team, in addition to not having a practice, they didn't even have a shoot-around to work through stuff before those games. And you look at the loss to New Orleans, you look at the loss to Atlanta, it looked like a team that didn't have a shoot-around. And I really wonder if the difference between the home and road splits this season have something to do with their ability to have a routine to actually prepare. Because we've talked about how important that preparation is. You look at this season, the Cavs are 10-10 at home. Their O rating is 109.5 at home and a negative 2.9 net rating. That's good. On the road, 5-15. 99.4 O rating. Woo! Awful. And a
stinky I don't know what that gif where the guy, the old man, just says stinky is from, but that's what popped into my head.
That's from I Think You Should Leave and You Should Absolutely Watch It, Carter, one of the better sketch
have
shows.
Not, I've have not watch. Seen it yet. I know I'm a minority on NBA Twitter.
You're behind on that, and the net rating on the road is negative 13.8. And
honestly, I'll say this, I thought it might have been worse.
I think that's a reasonable thought. And here's the thing, I don't want this to sound like an excuse, but this is something that if you're only watching the Cavs, you're going to see this discrepancy and say, okay, well, why are the results varying so different from game to game? Why do they look so unprepared some nights and on the money other nights? This is a league-wide trend. And I think it's amplified and made a lot worse when you're talking about the Cavs because they are starting so many guys that are young. They've had so much roster turnover. They're trying to reintegrate a new piece in Larry Nance under these circumstances where you're not even having a shoot around before the game. And I just think that it doesn't necessarily excuse it, and you want them to have less nights where things go that off the rails. But at the same time, like, that is a logical conclusion, and it's also a bit of a ray of hope that next season, crossing your fingers, knocking on wood, that when the conditions are a little more normal, when these guys have more experience under their belt, you're going to see a team that more resembles who they are at home, where they at least have an average offense, decent enough record, 500 record at home, and that's something that they can build off of, and they're not as much the awful team that we see in road games.
Yeah, I mean, they're minus 14 net rating on the road. Next worst is the Magic, who are minus 9.7. So it's an enormous jump from them to 29th. I mean, it's especially brutal, which makes sense given the injury issues, given the turmoil, given, I believe they've had a road heavy schedule. to start the year. They've had a few 4 or 5 game road trips.
It's been even. It's been even, but the road trips have been all at one time, right? Like the 10 game losing streak was predominantly on the road. This
Yeah, it's literally even. I do wonder, you know, and as you're saying this, I'm almost having this thought, like, you know how sometimes teams get lucky by getting unlucky?
Yeah.
I think the most charitable way to view this season, if you are feeling the most optimistic possible, is that, you know, what if this team was supposed to take a bit of a leap this year and be, you know, a fringe playoff contender, not just because the East is terrible, but be hovering much closer to 500 than they are, but because of all the circumstantial stuff that basically just kills young teams, a 9-month layoff, no practice, bad injury luck, etc. It would be nice if their record was being artificially dampened compared to teams with a little bit more veteran support that are more built to weather the storm.
Carter, it's going to shock you, but that is something that I very strongly believe. I think this team is better than their record.
And in that case, if they are better than their record, because again, their point differential suggests they are way, 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 way worse than their record. So if they are better than their record and we are, our theory crafting is correct, then the Cavs might have the chance to, in our even in a bad scenario where their record stays poor, add one more stud. Yeah. But, you know, I will say it makes evaluation maddeningly difficult for us. And I'm sure the team themselves, like, how are they supposed to, how's Kobe Altman supposed to keep building this roster with all this noise? You know, we've talked about, I mean, just on this one podcast where we're mostly being pretty positive, we've talked about like 7 mitigating factors that make it impossible to actually evaluate whether the team is good or not. And that is, it's really, really hard to wrap your head around.
It really is. And you know what? That segues into what I want to talk to next. But before I get there, I want to drop one more stat on you. Hashtag stat, because now I'm rolling. I'm cooking with gas here, Carter.
Go, 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 go.
At home, what do you think the net or the offensive rating for Sexland is?
Oh, man. Oh, well, the fact you're asking me tells me it must be pretty good. I'll say 108.
113.2, baby.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that's pretty good. You know,
I mean, it doesn't take much to tell you that those two change the complexion of the offense when they're on the floor together, and that the offense loses a significant amount of oomph when only one is on the floor, and collapses into utter rubble with neither.
Yes. And you know what? I think we're also being a little negligent as well, Carter. We didn't talk about one more factor that could have contributed to their great night. Sexland is in the team's intro video, baby.
I'll tell you what. I think we made it, Justin.
I think we just might have, man. You know what? I got to say, like, it is one more of those kind of surreal moments. Like, how many mountaintop moments have we had in, like, the past calendar year? An objectively terrible year when you're talking about COVID and the whole world ending and all the uncertainty. We have had some pretty cool moments, and that one is really high up there. And you know what? I know we are affiliated with the Cavs, but I got to say, I love that they're embracing being fun. Like, things like that, you know, just taking some chances on putting Sexland in there. When they were posting the NCAA tournament pictures, I don't know if you saw that, but they had Torian Prince's rebound speech, the picture from that. Like, that is a really funny thing to do. And I feel like more and more teams are starting to trend in that direction, but the Cavs are knocking it out of the park lately. And it's a lot of fun for me to watch, because that is my ethos.
Well, because it's our ethos. And because it's our things they're taking.
Yes, that is also,
well, not one. Our thing. Sexland is for everyone, but a thing that we have loudly propagated. I will say it is an interesting thing outside of the basketball side of things, where we've seen that all these companies that are very, very careful with their messaging are learning that you actually don't have to be that careful with your messaging if you're not an absolute idiot. Like, you can actually have a lot of fun. Like, you just think of, like, you know, even outside of basketball, like, you know, the Wendy's Twitter account trash talking other fast food restaurants, you know. It's like, we all kind of know this doesn't matter. So on online, like, sure, you can mess up. So you still have to be careful and conscientious and smart. As always, good jokes are, you know, jokes are ruined by stupid people.
Did you see the Miami Heat's jokes? Did you see the Miami Heat's Twitter account take out the Grizzlies for no good reason?
No.
So,
well, do you remember that that was happening a lot, and then the league kind of like tamped it down, and I was bummed.
Well, I think that's because they went with the horse gun emoji with the
Rockets. Well, no. That was a separate exchange. I think the Kings Twitter account had talked some trash, and the NBA sent a memo that was like, they need to stop talking trash on the team accounts. And this was like five to seven years ago. It was a while ago.
Yeah. The Grizzlies account had basically tweeted, "We won't even ask about the yellow jerseys. Let's play ball." And Miami's response was something to the effect of, "It's our championship color trophy jersey or whatever. You wouldn't know anything about that." Like, just going for the jugular right off the bat. Like, those jerseys are objectively terrible. I don't care what anyone says. And
I will say they look a little bit better, right? On the court, at least.
Yeah. Well, I mean, most jerseys do. And plus, they went with the NFT approach with that, basically, where they released just a limited number of those jerseys. They added up the years that they won, so 2012, 2013, and I guess 2006, I think. And that's the number of those jerseys that are available.
Justin?
Corny stuff, man.
Ask me what NFT stands for.
What does NFT stand for?
I have no clue. Do you?
Yes, I think it's non-fungible tokens.
Oh, my God. Can we tell the story about our terrible Top Shot brand ambassadorship on this podcast?
I think we let the I think we missed the boat on this one, but go ahead.
Sure. So I think I've been kind of telling a few people this on the side. So before NBA Top Shot went public, both your boy and Justin were reached out to by Top Shot to be brand ambassadors for the program, and they gave us some like currency, some, you know, some crypto to buy some packs with while the program was still in beta. And all we had to do was like tweet a few like nice things about Top Shot, and we didn't get paid for it. The whole thing was like, we just got some crypto, you know, some Top Shot currency to pay with. And Justin and I didn't understand it one iota.
I feel so old. Nothing has made me feel older. I'm not even criticizing Top Shot, but like, I got my tweets in, and I don't think I even followed up on like the free pack or whatever we were supposed to get.
So
I might have cost myself thousands.
So we put in the most piss poor effort of tweets. Like I just followed the brand guide and like basically copy pasted. Couldn't have been worse. And then, like a month later, I hear NBA Top Shot sold for $100,000. I'm like, Justin, you realize that we're the dudes that sold our Apple stock a year in?
No, know who we are. We are. Do you remember like when Bitcoin was first a thing and that guy had a viral video of buying pizza with Bitcoin and it was like $18 worth of Bitcoin, and now it's worth like that amount would have been worth like $1 billion or something stupid like that. That's who we are.
We are so dumb. So if you ever want to listen to us, just know that we are so stupid, so short-sighted, and lazy, frankly, because if we had just thought and given I didn't even need to believe in it, but just gave it an honest effort, we might have a lot of money now.
Well, it's worse than that, because like I hit my quota. I just didn't ask for the pack or whatever follow-up I was supposed to do after the fact. I'm an idiot. And in the same spirit of talking about how stupid we are, let's circle back to 3 days ago when we were talking about, all right, starting Larry Nance Jr. for the remainder of the season. I'm still on board with that. But Isaac Okoro, I had the take. I did that thing of when I'm wrong, I lump you into it.
Nice, dear.
But I had the take of maybe moving him to the second unit and still playing him the same amount of minutes, playing him the starters' minutes, but just for spacing. And you know what? I had a bit of a revelation. I marinated on the thought, and I think I might have been getting a little too cute with my take. I think that's what happened there. Man, was he good against Boston, and you know what, he's good against Miami too. And if you're playing him starters minutes one way or another, it's almost circling back to the sex line conversation we had to start the season, where if they are going to be playing significant minutes, yeah, like starting kind of matters, but in the grand scheme of things, if they're still playing the same number of minutes, it's not that big of a deal. And plus, when you look at the season, the offense actually is better when he's on the floor versus off.
Yeah, I mean, I think that says a lot about kind of who's been coming off the bench, and
that's true.
You know, and who plays on those second units. Because remember, I'm sure he plays. I'll bet if you look at his minutes paired with Sexlander, at least one of them, is pretty hefty. My brain still says he would be best served coming off the bench once the team has a player that's kind of worthy of starting above him. I think given the team they have healthy right now, no, I think he should still be starting. I thought he had an elite game against Miami. Against Boston. Played really, really good defense. Man, did they play good defense on Tatum and Brown or what? Like Larry was all over Jaylen on a lot of possessions. Isaac was really, really in Tatum's face, forcing really tough shots, and Tatum was going bananas in the second half. I would say 95% of the players in the league being guarded the way Isaac was guarding them would not have scored, even at the rate Tatum did, and he didn't have that efficient of a night. I still think he should come off the bench once Prince is healthy, unless he again earns his way, in my opinion, to get in there. But man, he was very, very good against Boston. There's no way around it. Can we actually go to one of our dear podcast listeners' takes? And it's a silly take. It's our dear friend Hiram Boyd. Hi, Hiram. And he wants to start Dean Wade over Larry Nance because of the spacing.
No, that's getting too cute.
And I think it is too cute by a mile. But I did want to use that as a springboard to talk more about how thrilled I am with the way Dean Wade is playing for this team.
Yeah, I mean, let's give some credit to our draft expert in front of the podcast, Trevor Magnotti, who had Dean Wade actually ranked, I think he had him ranked 40th on his big board, with the big question being kind of the foot injuries that he had coming into the NBA, but said he's a mobile forward that plays good defense, that can be an effective weapon in the pick and pop. And this guy's a shooter. Like, I've seen enough out of him. He is remarkably consistent. Like, he's actually brought a level of consistency that we haven't even seen with Dylan Windler.
Now, I was about to say, he's been a better shooter than Dylan Windler this year.
Right, and maybe some of that is he didn't miss all of last season rehabbing and
sure helps. He
was playing in Canton, and you kind of get your reps in there. So I'm sure that that's a contributing factor to that. But he has really been a valuable piece to them. And more, like the more I'm seeing him, I'm sitting here thinking, this guy's a rotation player. Like, this is a guy that belongs on an NBA roster. This is a guy that the Cavs are fortunate to have had and to have developed and brought up in their system. I'm really, really pleased with what he's brought to the table, and I'd like to see them continue to keep finding ways to keep him in the rotation. I mean, that's not a problem as long as Kevin Love is out, so maybe we will in all likelihood see a good amount of him down the stretch this season. But man, I'm just really impressed with his two-way ability. Like, something I expected.
And it's funny, he's kind of in that camp of players who solid good NBA players see him and think they see food.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, wait a minute, this isn't as easy as I thought it was going to be. He moves his feet really, really well. I've talked a lot about how much I like the way he closes out on shooters. Really, really balanced, chops his feet really well. And then on the offensive side, I mean, the three, it feels like he has just been, it's either he got more confident or the Cavs coaching staff told him to get more confident, because I do think there is a degree of, like, you don't take a three off a pin down and catch, turn and fire unless you've been empowered to do so. You know what I mean? And I feel like he has very much been empowered to shoot the ball. And that second three he made against Boston in the fourth quarter, which is really, really important, by the way, to keeping their distance when they were just, coming after them like an avalanche. Right, those kind of threes actually bend the defense and cause you to force attention. And I just never thought I'd be talking about a player like this who's averaging 3.5 points and 2.1 rebounds. Mm-hmm. And obviously those stats are very, very skewed from games where he was at the very end of the rotation playing 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes. But yeah, I'm just really, really impressed with him in general. And I like the way that he finds ways to impact the game. In the month of March, he's averaging two made threes a game in just 20 minutes, putting up 4.5 in those 20 minutes. And really, he's pretty much realized that the only way I'm going to score, or the only way I'm going to shoot, is I'm going to try to finish in transition when I have an open lane by running the floor hard, and I'm going to take threes. Mm-hmm. And I think that is exactly the kind of shot diet that's going to keep him in the league. And man, I'm just really glad they have him. He's such a great contingency. Like, if you told me that the Cavs power forward rotation for the rest of the year was going to be Larry Nance and Dean Wade, I'd be like, okay, that's not a big problem to me. Like, that is not a huge concern for me in that position group. Where if you had told me that at the beginning of the year, I might have been pretty concerned.
Yeah, I definitely would have had some concerns there. And I think you're correct to highlight that pin down play. You did a good job spotlighting that on Twitter as well. You're seeing more of those. And I think that that's something that the Cavs...
Yeah, they ran one for Sexton too, right?
Yeah, as well as Garland. Garland hit one where I was like, okay, there you go. You need to take those. Because when we're talking about those second half adjustments Miami and Boston has made... a lot of the time, like, Garland is making the right basketball play, but there is times where he has enough space to get a shot off, and he needs to be a little more aggressive in those times, because he needs to understand, hey, I'm not going to see the same first half defense that I saw. They understand what I can bring to the table, how much of a threat I am, and when I'm scoring, it makes everybody else more dangerous. So when they start trying to take that away, he needs to be aggressive. He needs to get those shots up, especially coming off of those pin downs. I'm seeing more and more no hesitation threes from him off ball, and that's a really nice development. I like that the coaching staff is implementing those type of looks, but they need more guys with that mentality, with that Dean Wade mentality of, we're just going to go out there and we're going to pull some threes. I do find it really ironic when you look at this recent stretch, because we had talked about the three-point shooting from the Cavs and how the volume concerns were maybe a little dated. I do find it funny that the one game they win is the game where they took 23 threes to Boston's 38 threes, especially when they took so many more than Miami the game before. Sure, they made the same number of threes as Boston, so it was nice to see some actual accurate three-point shooting. But it is ironic that the one game where they don't take a ton of threes, that they end up winning. But I do think some of that was Boston's missing people in the middle. I thought they attacked the rim effectively. I want to give a special shout out to Colin Sexton, who, man, he had a great night. He kind of burst out of his outside, or broke out of his outside shooting slump that he had been in, and against a really, really good defender in Jaylen Brown.
I mean, yeah, I kind of just like it when you watch the Celtics when they're locked in on defense, it's a wonder anyone ever scores on that defensive backcourt. I mean, Marcus Smart and honestly, it makes you just think, like, that is a team that, like, you kind of have to attack their second unit players. And that's really where I think the Cavs won this game, is in the Jeff Teague minutes and the Peyton Pritchard minutes, even though he had a positive plus minus. Like, those are like, it's like, oh, Jesus, finally, someone who I can dribble and run a normal pick and roll against.
Dude, so not to derail you here, but no, fine. If you're Sam Presti, look at Boston and view it as a cautionary tale. Because this is what happens when you stockpile a ton of picks and you don't make any moves for them, and you just have to kind of take some random shots later in the draft. Because Boston's bench is loaded with guys they took kind of mid to late first round that they didn't really have time to develop. None of these guys worked out. Like, so many whiffs. Like, it is amazing that they didn't turn any of those picks into something that matters, and that they basically, like, I don't want to say wasted picks. Maybe some of it was, hey, we had other high usage guys in Gordon Hayward, Al Horford, Kyrie, and we didn't really have the ability to develop them. But you got to recognize where you are on that developmental curve. When you are a team that's going to the conference finals, you're not going to have the same ability to develop players. We saw it in Cleveland. So this is absolutely a cautionary tale. And another one of those examples that acquiring assets is great, but the actual construction of a team and team building isn't so easy. That's the actual hard part here.
Yeah. And ultimately it's just a matter of, like, you have to cash in on assets. Like, unless I understand that everyone wants to have the Godfather package available to them, to go get a super duper star. But especially if you're Sam Presti, like if you are sitting on a big stockpile of picks, I would be cashing those ones that are you're expecting to land in the 27, 28, 29 range from some of these contenders you helped build. You know, like be cashing those in as trade chips. You know, think about someone like Jared Allen. Like, would Jared Allen be good with this young Thunder core?
Yeah. So many teams are probably taking themselves over.
Well, I'm sure, but there's young players like that all the time, you know, that get moved. You know, the Caris LeVert, who's maybe a tough example because he's a little bit older, just because he was in college for so long. But like, there are young players that get moved that, you know, you don't have to pay a crazy amount to. And also, like, how clean does OKC's books need to get? Like, you know, they have the Horford contract. They're obviously taking on some money here and there, but they're also rerouting a lot of that money. So I don't know, man. You know how I felt. We felt this way about Danny Ainge's decisions at the time when he was like, no, I don't want to trade for Boogie. No, I don't want to trade for Kawhi. No, I don't want to trade for PG. And it's like, yeah, you got a couple really, really good players, and they're always going to be ahead of everyone else because they have those two until they don't. Mm-hmm. But like, youth only gets you so far, and a contending team shouldn't be relying on this many 20-year-olds.
And like, they have had a lot of injuries, and they've dealt with COVID and whatnot. But I feel like the Cavs also have enough man games missed this season that I can point this out. It's remarkable with the personnel that they have that their defensive rating for the year is only 0.5 better than the Cavs. It's 112.3 versus the Cavs 112.8. Like, 22nd ranked defense for that Boston Celtics team is just, it's wild. And
well, you know what I think Smart is the wildest
time,
stat?
Jason Tatum's missed time, but still, like, that, still, that's mind-boggling.
You know what the wildest stat is?
What's that?
The Charlotte Hornets are a half game up on the Boston Celtics in the standings.
That is objectively funny.
That is hilarious. Now, I'm sure that'll go... You know, talking about a team that's overperforming, the Hornets are getting outscored on the year, but they're over 500. Mm-hmm. But man, it is hilarious. The fact that Gordon Hayward walks, they get a trade exception for him. And then this Hornets team is somehow better, which, by the way, I think a lot of people saw as a possibility because that team was so fun last year. What's wild about that Hornets team, by the way, and I know we're just way off topic now, but whatever, we're near the end of the podcast. You know what's weird about them is, didn't you kind of think that they were going to need more out of like Devontae Graham, who looked like their maybe young star coming out of last year? It's like, oh, that guy, he can shoot three with volume and he's really, really good. And he's had a terrible year, been injury riddled, jumper's not there. And it's like, no, well, you know, Gordon Hayward, Terry Rozier are really, really good. And then Malik Monk found himself. And then all of a sudden you got a team that's going to make the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. And as I said, LaMelo Ball is out of this world, like clear.
Well, that helps. That sure helps.
Fantastic. But yeah, adding Gordon Hayward, as much as we aren't the biggest fans of him, he brings a lot to the table. And I would have thought that they'd need to upgrade their center position a little bit to get to this range. But
well, boy, can they, Justin. Just Andre Drummond for Cody Zeller, some flotsam and a couple picks. Call it in.
Speaking of Andre Drummond, Mark Stein did report that basically the Toronto talks are dead. Makes sense because Norm Powell was an essential part of that deal.
And he is a human torch.
Yeah, he's been pretty fantastic. He was struggling early in the season, so that makes sense. Probably, like, my gut instinct at this point, no sources. Again, we are not journalists. We are not the Sauces Pod. I kind of feel like we're heading to a buyout. Zach Lowe had reported that there are offers on the table. If the Cavs really wanted a second round pick, there are offers on the table. It would just take bad salary in return, which at this point, as we said, it's really nice. It'll be really nice to actually go into an offseason with flexibility. And at some point you need to start building up the roster. And if this team is, as we've said, better than their record, and even their record indicates a sizable leap from last season, despite what some frustrated people will tell you, then you probably want some flexibility to round out the roster, to get those supporting pieces in, to get those guys that help make things easier for the young players. Like when we talk about Charlotte and adding some veterans there, like the Cavs clearly recognize the value of veterans. So it wouldn't surprise me to see their moves at the deadline be to maybe add a couple pieces that help out for this season, but really position themselves to add talent at in the offseason and really round out this rotation.
Can I grump? Can I grump for a second? Ugh.
Yeah, go ahead.
Andre Drummond is averaging 18 points, 14 boards, 2.5 assists, 1.5 steals, and a block per game. The Cavaliers were better with him on the floor. They outscored opponents when he was on the floor. And they're going to have to buy him out.
Think peace intelligentsia, man. That's
what really is going on.
People are getting way too.
He's on an expiring contract, and they're just going to let the Brooklyn Nets sign this guy for the league minimum.
Well, it sounds like it'll be the. I think the latest reporting is that the Lakers kind of have the leg up because.
Well, whoever, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely absurd. This guy, if we were still writers, I would have deep dived and actually do the research, but by several like hundreds of degrees of magnitude will be the best player to ever receive a buyout in NBA history.
He's going to decide who wins the championship.
Like, it is bananas, a real
possibility
to me.
Of that, like if he goes to Brooklyn or LA, that's canceled Christmas.
Like, and it's not deal. Even it's not even like he's got like a four-year deal that the team is stretching to get out of. There's nothing wrong with him as an asset. No. This is insanity. Every team in the league, or at least half of them, have some terrible contract to send back.
Yeah, and like
what is going on?
That's one of the weirdest things. Like that was part of why I felt it was a worthwhile gamble in the first place. Well, a big part of it was the free agent class. And yeah, it sucks that we didn't get more of a run with him last season. COVID kind of took that away. It's mind-boggling to me. It really is. It feels like, once again, people get a little too cute where, oh, he's not exactly the archetype of what we'd want. He's still a productive player. And another guy that I'm going to be wishing all the best for, because like it made sense why they moved on the way they did. I think everybody saw what was going on. And Jared Allen has been really fun. And we're kind of, once again, progressing towards that kind of clean slate with the young core that we've wanted. But at the end of the day, Andre Drummond is still someone that can help out another team. I'm still a believer in that. And
I am befuddled by the deadness of this market. There are so many teams that could use a little help at center, and that, you know, all they got to do is get an owner to pay. It's not like they're going to take on, you know, long-term salary. Again, this is an expiring contract.
Yeah. Well,
and you're only paying them half the year.
Yeah. Real G's move in silence, man. The Cavs don't usually leak a lot. So
maybe something's going to happen, but this is not, and I really do not feel like this is an indictment of the Cleveland Cavaliers that nobody thinks Andre Drummond could help them for half a year. Mm-hmm. I think it is so stupid. I didn't think it was stupid last year because it was 1.5 years of a huge salary. This is just an owner protecting their pocketbooks at this point, or a GM who thinks they've solved basketball that thinks that this dude can't help. And maybe this rant will blow up in my face later if he loves through a game in the finals and loses LA a game. But any good team can use a player this talented. Like how many times do we have to see a talented player get surrounded by other talent and then become the best version of themselves before we realize that it's not as simple as they didn't work on this, their team that wasn't that good, so they must suck.
Yeah. No, I think you make a valid point there.
That best player
these kind of elite contending teams that have an interest in him don't really have the salary matching to make it work. So the teams that aren't very good are sending crappy offers with salary, and they don't really have confidence that they can retain them. Like, there's a whole bunch of factors that might go into it, and a little more nuance to be had. But I think ultimately, yeah, It's unbelievable.
I get that there's more nuance to have, you should not be the best player in NBA history to be bought out by this kind of margin. Mm-hmm. If the margin between you and PJ Brown is this freaking big, then the league has failed in some way, in my opinion.
Man, my guy S, from the Raptors Twitter, just tweeted, Andre Drummond is like the Mysterio of the NBA. That man makes you think he's doing more than he actually is on the court. You know what? I think there's going to be a course correction. He's going to end up on a good team, and people are going to I think your take's going to age well, is what I'm trying to say.
I'm not saying he's perfect. I think we've been very, very fair in the way we've evaluated Andre and why we felt like it was the best thing for the Cavs to send him home. Mm-hmm. But man, what are we doing here? This is a league that is so desperate for talent that PJ Tucker is getting two fake first rounders. Listen, and we're gonna let Andre Drummond hit the market for the veterans minimum. You know what they should do? You can't even take him on waivers because they're gonna buy him out. So, this is such weird. This
you know what it is? It's the theme of the pod. Getting a little too cute. I think everyone's getting a little too cute.
You're telling me, man.
I got too cute with my Okoro take. You're still there. That's fine. You'll come around in time. I have now, in the span of 3 days, completely changed my stance and feel very strongly about it, as I am wont to do. And the league is going to see with Andre Drummond once he's in a good situation. So looking forward to seeing that. Looking forward to either laughing at our takes or, you know, doing a little bit of a victory lap, as we like to do. The Cavs are next in action on Friday. They take on the San Antonio Spurs. I'm looking forward to that. DeMar DeRozan will not play. Good news for them because he has been fantastic this season. And I want another win. I want a little bit of feel good. And I also want feel good on Sunday because I'm going to be watching a Raptors-Cavs game with some of my family, which is going to be really exciting.
But before you wrap, Justin, it's very important that I ask this. Will the Cavs have made a trade by the time we next podcast?
I don't think so. I don't think so either. I think it'll be semi-busy at the deadline. I think they're going to weigh their options. I think there might be deals in the chamber. If I had to guess, and again, no sauces here. If I had to guess, I think that there's deals in the chamber, but keeping options open, especially when it comes to Andre Drummond, are you going to tie another player to that, make a more kind of complex trade to get something going on? It wouldn't surprise me if that's kind of what's holding up some of the action, but you never know. This team does not leak a whole lot. We certainly are not getting information on that as well, and that's okay because I like the space we operate in. It's fun for me. And you know what? Before I wrap as well, I do want to give a massive thank you to our listeners. You guys came in strong with the reviews. I had asked for more ratings and reviews, and you guys blew me away. I genuinely get emotional when I read it. The support of our audience, it's amazing. You guys are the absolute best. Carter, do you have anything to add to that as well? I don't want to wrap but before you have a chance to add on to me.
I really wanted to go Barry Gibb talk show and just say, no, I don't. But no, I very much appreciate the love. Reading through those reviews always lifts my spirits. It's so cool to see, the variety and ways that people enjoy listening. It's just kind of an honor and really cool. So thank you very much for supporting the podcast. And please, if you haven't reviewed, please do. It's very, very helpful to the pod. I couldn't tell you how, but it sure is.
You know how? Because Apple's metrics are messed up. That's why I always tell people to leave that rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe to help cook those books, because those charts are only on new subscriptions. They're not factoring in what we've been bringing to the table, the consistency of our listener base. So massive thanks to all of our listeners. Make sure you guys continue to support us or else we will hunt you down. Or else we will hunt you down. If you haven't left a rating yet, please do.
Or we will burn Utica to the ground.
Oh man, this was a fun podcast. Thank you again to all our listeners. Your support really does mean a lot to us. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, Go Cavs.